Welcome to Hidden Bridges from Viva Sound, where we meet with LSE academics to discuss unexplored connections between issues, allowing us to better understand the challenges we face. I'm Ellie, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Oscar Weber from the Department of International History on the influence of colonization on natural disasters, asking if natural disasters can ever be natural. So, hi, welcome to Viva Sound.
Thank you very much for having me.
Would you like to just introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Dr. Oscar Weber. I'm a teaching fellow in the Department of International History. I teach a lot about the rise of the British Empire, British Atlantic, the rise of capitalism, and also slavery and abolition in the British Empire. But my research primarily focuses on human responses to disaster within the 19th century British Caribbean. And more broadly, as an environmental historian, I'm interested in the ways in which historical processes shape modern day vulnerability to disaster.
So why do you think it's important for historians to focus on natural disasters when this is traditionally attributed to geographical academia?
So I actually got started looking at disaster as an undergraduate, and I was supervised by an academic called Professor Greg Bancroft, and he's been a kind of bit of a pathbreaker in this field. And he has argued, as I do myself, that historians actually have a really crucial role to play in understanding disasters. Specifically, we can think about, you know, geographers might tell us about the technicalities of disaster. They might tell us about the ways in which hurricanes or cyclones are shaped and ways in which they emerge. But the historian has a really crucial role to play in understanding why certain societies are more vulnerable to disaster than others, because many of the processes that make people vulnerable to disaster are historical ones.
So given that you specialise in Caribbean history, do you think you could just give us some examples of how historical processes have induced or worsened natural disasters?
Yeah, so in my thesis and actually also in my upcoming book, what I explore is a lot of the ways in which British colonisation in the Caribbean worsened the effects of disaster in the region, specifically really to hurricanes, and also the vulnerabilities that the British created also triggered a number of epiphenomenal hazards. That's kind of extra hazards that are kind of result from the initial impact of a disaster. So really, to kind of understand that, we have to start with the beginning of British colonisation in the region. The British went to the Caribbean really to try and grow cash crops, to enrich Britain. And they tried a number of cash crops, cotton, tobacco, etc., etc. But eventually they kind of settled upon sugar, which they found grew very well in the kind of luxuriant soils and the constant heat of the Caribbean. So very quickly the sugar becomes the dominant cash crop that's exported from the Caribbean. And we know that the labour system of that evolved from indentured servitude to the mass slavery of African people. But focusing really on the environmental changes that fed the plantation and its expansion, number one is deforestation. So when the British arrive, say, on Barbados, it's almost impenetrable jungle all the way down to the beach. And this is at the beginning of the 17th century. By the end of the 17th century, Barbados is almost entirely reliant on imported timber. It has to bring in timber from Virginia, Tobago, and other parts of the Americas, because almost every tree on Barbados has been chopped down in the service of building the boiling houses and the equipment for processing sugar, also clearing the land for more and more sugarcane, and also the wood is used to feed the furnaces that boil the sugar. And deforestation creates a number of issues. Firstly, the soils kind of lose their anchor. The roots of trees are really good at holding soil together. And so when hurricanes arrive, which they do on an almost annual basis in the period kind of June through October in the Caribbean, the really heavy winds and heavy water rain that these hurricanes bring, the kind of the awful effects of that is only magnified by the fact that there's no trees holding the soil together. The soil really easily washes away. It creates huge landslides. So you have this kind of issue of the hurricane arrives and everybody's trying to deal with the high winds and all the rest of it, and then they're facing these extra issues on the top, like big landslides and washing away all the fertile soil and all the rest of it. So in that, we can begin to see some of the kind of crucial ways in which the British altered the Caribbean environment and how that made them more vulnerable to hurricanes in the region.
So given that the Caribbean formed an essential part of the British Empire, it was home to British citizens and a lot of British property was located here, what efforts do you see on the part of the British government to provide relief or prepare for these pretty much annual hazards?
So this idea of how the British responded, not just on the ground in the Caribbean, but how they responded at a governmental level in Parliament is really interesting, and it's something I've explored a lot in my research. And we have this, there's kind of a big issue for the British in terms of how do we provide relief for, you know, those suffering from the after effects of disaster in the Caribbean. The Caribbean, to the British, was always envisaged as a region from which they were going to profit massively, not as a region which they were going to have to pour money into. But to continue the exploitation and the export of sugar, they needed to put money back in there to repair all the infrastructure to continue the production of sugar. So they kind of stuck between two poles of thinking, we're kind of opposed to the general idea of having to pour money into these colonies, but also we need to give them a bit of money now after this hurricane or this earthquake or this volcanic eruption, otherwise they won't be able to produce any more sugar and continue that flow of profit. So they're kind of stuck between these two opposing poles in terms of how do we provide relief. And what you find as a result then is, and I found this in the archive a lot, that there's a really lengthy process where the plantation owners of the Caribbean know that their chances of getting compensation is quite low. So they really, really overestimate their losses when they send letters back to Parliament. Oh, they say, oh, we've lost all of these buildings. So many people have died. I've lost all the oxen that pull the carts, etc., etc. And the British then engage, this is in Parliament, engage in a lengthy process of trying to determine how true those claims are. And eventually what we see often is that the British do provide some money just out of the sheer necessity of trying to restart the sugar plantations, but often it falls far, far short of the estimates of the damage given by plantation owners.
So after abolition and then decolonisation, what relationship do you see develop between the British and the Caribbean, particularly with reference to natural disasters?
It's quite a complex relationship. I think a really, really interesting and actually overlooked example of this evolving relationship takes place right at the beginning of the 20th century. In 1907, the capital of Jamaica, Kingston, is hit by a really, really severe earthquake. And this causes mass casualties. And it also triggers a big urban fire that consumes lots of the business district and all of the wharfs involved in the docks in Kingston. And this disaster occurs precisely at the moment at which Britain is starting to withdraw in terms of its influence, but also in terms of its navy in the Caribbean region. And America, after its kind of annexation of Cuba and victory against the Spanish colonial powers, is starting to encroach in the Caribbean. And Britain, in particular, the governor of Jamaica at the time, Alexander Swetnam, finds himself in quite a lot of hot water because he's trying to control and manage the situation in Kingston after the earthquake, and the Americans turn up, to his mind, unannounced, and offer loads of aid to the people of Kingston. And he gets quite defensive about this, and he basically tries to send the Americans home, even though there was a lot of need for relief in the Caribbean at the time. And so that kind of sets the tone of Britain is trying to withdraw from the Caribbean, but it's also uncomfortable with the encroachment of America in the region, but it particularly after World War One simply really doesn't have the resources to continue colonization on the scale that it had previously. It's interesting because the Caribbean since 1907 has sustained a number of powerful disaster impacts, a couple of hurricanes in the 1950s, for instance, but nothing quite on the scale of the disasters that they suffered in the 19th century. I think it'll be really interesting in a hopefully not too morbid way, if there is a significant disaster in the ex-British colonies in the Caribbean, to see how that relationship will be negotiated, because to this day there is a evolving political dialogue in the Caribbean about the need for Britain to supply reparations to formerly Caribbean colonies, reparations for enslavement and slavery, for which Britain has, I think we could say fairly, has largely dodged the question or avoided the question. Sometimes, as on occasion, said outright no. So I think, given the way in which the legacy of British colonialism continues to affect the region in terms of its underdevelopment and in terms of the large amount of debt for modernisation programmes in the region, it'll be interesting to see if, which we hope there isn't, but if there is a large-scale disaster, how that relationship will be negotiated between Britain and its Caribbean colonies.
So in the modern day, how can we see this relationship as not just specific to the Caribbean and the British, but applicable to the entire process of colonisation?
So I think one of the things that we see that's quite interesting, if we know about the history of colonisation and where has previously been colonised in the world, is that in this era of climate crisis, as the number of disasters is seemingly on the rise, triggered by feedback loops from our warming climate, is that many of the nations which are most vulnerable in the world to disaster impacts are the formerly colonised nations. And so I think this is reflective of the fact that many of these nations, like the Caribbean, formerly colonised, have, by their, you know, the former colonial powers, have had much of their history has been one of conflict, and it's also been one of domination and oppression, and that has left many of these countries, by Western standards, underdeveloped. They've had many centuries where, if infrastructure was built at all, it was directed to the continued exploitation and extraction of material wealth or the production of commodities for export. And so I think when we think about the why is it that so many of the formerly colonized nations are the most vulnerable to disaster in the world today, we can really think about that colonial legacy and the role that that has played in curtailing the capacity of these countries to build resilience to the natural phenomena of which they historically experience.
So to conclude, what efforts, if any, are being made to provide reparations for the process of colonisation, and specifically with reference to climate change, where previously colonised states are more vulnerable to this process? Are international institutions or important actors taking into account the influence of historical processes on the modern experience?
This is a complex question, and I think, in this case, I think the person who's probably done the most work on this that's really interesting is Naomi Klein. And in probably her most famous book, The Shock Doctrine, she advances this idea of disaster capitalism, in which disaster often becomes, for international institutions like the IMF, the World Bank, and various corporations and other private entities, disaster of any kind usually can be seen as an opportunity to open new markets and exploit crisis, to impose restrictions and legislate in new ways and new radical ways that wouldn't be possible before crisis. And I think this is something that increasingly we are going to see in this climate emergency, is that, I mean, I would hope that many of these institutions try and respond positively and help after these disaster situations. But I think one really only has to look to, say, even very recently, what's happened to Puerto Rico in the wake of the hurricanes in 2017, to see that we may end up slipping, hopefully not, but we may end up slipping into, I think, what Klein has termed quite emotively an era of climate barbarism, in which these most vulnerable nations that do need help, not just in terms of financial help, but in terms of help of trying to build resilience to disaster and other natural phenomena, that they are left increasingly vulnerable and increasingly exploited because of their vulnerability, which really has largely emerged from earlier forms of Western exploitation through colonialism.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for coming in.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. This has been Hidden Bridges with me, Ellie Reeves, and our guest today, Dr. Oscar Weber. If you want to look at the past episodes of Beaver Sound, just look on our Spotify. And if you want to keep up to date with our output, follow us on Facebook.